It seems like just yesterday when I captured my son's first steps or when we recorded his soccer games on VHS tapes. Those moments are gone. But the old home movies and pictures don't need to be. That's why my son created Legacy Box.
That's right, Mom. Over a million families have used Legacy Box to digitally preserve their old home movies and photos.
Simply fill Legacy Box with your old camcorder tapes, film, and photos. They will professionally digitize and send them back on DVDs, thumb drive, or the cloud.
With Mother's Day around the corner, it's the perfect time to get your Legacy Box and save your family's history. After all, few things are as important as protecting your precious memories. Give your mom a Mother's Day present she'll never forget. Take advantage of our Mother's Day sale, which starts now. It's our best deal of the year. Save up to 60% off. Visit legacybox.com/keepsake, and for a limited time, get an incredible 60% off your order. That's legacybox.com/keepsake for 60% off. legacybox.com/keepsake.
Hey there, welcome to episode 377 of the Find Your Food Voice podcast. Thank you for joining me, and this is a very special and important episode that I feel really honored to be able to share with you. And you are going to hear from a local friend and colleague. Their name is Jesse Spence, and Jesse reached out to me to talk about their experiences with a GLP-1. And just want to give you a heads up, we are going to be talking about that and their lived experience navigating the weight loss conversation, weight changes. So there is some discussions on weight going up and down and increases in eating disorder behaviors. So again, just take care of yourself as you decide whether to continue to listen or not. And something that we are very frank about in this discussion is how we need to provide more community and to support, especially for, you know, if you're someone who is not new to body liberation conversations or anti-diet spaces, that there needs to be a space that feels safe enough for folks to be able to navigate their decisions, because this world is fucking like on fire, right? And so as a person is trying to navigate these different systems and just live their life, I know I want to provide support. And so, again, I feel really grateful that Jesse has been willing to share their experience with us. So there are a few things that I would like you to know about Jesse. So Jesse is the founder and clinical director of Spence Counseling, where they supervise the best therapists on earth. And some things about Spence Counseling. Spence Counseling is committed to providing the best clinical care and doing so with kindness and integrity. Their work embraces a commitment to racial, gender, sexuality, ability, and size equity as a part of their mission to view all clients as the holistic and complex people they are. They also provide consultation and clinical supervision in the community and have been advocating for trans and gender nonconforming folks for well over 10 years. All right, so we are going to take a quick sponsor break, and then when we come back, we will share this conversation that I had with Jesse Spence. Hey there, Jesse. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. I don't know how long ago it was that we did that episode. It seemed like years ago.
I know.
And I remember being so nervous. And this time I'm like, yay, let's do this.
Oh, I'm so glad. What a great turn of events.
Yeah.
And actually, I forgot that we had already recorded together. Yeah. And as I pushed record, I was like, oh, wait.
Yeah.
Jesse's been on before.
It's like ancient history. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know what year it was, but it was not this year. So
it may even been like in the COVID times or before COVID times, like one of those kind of things. So, you know. That's all murky now.
Sure.
Well, I'm glad that we're going to chat because when you reached out and we were starting to chat about this topic, I was thinking, hell yes, I want to talk about this. So how about we start with there? Like, what led you to want to record this conversation today?
Yeah. Well, I think I texted you.
Because that's our talking.
Yeah. Because I think it's part of like my personality. Like I'm an Enneagram 4. Like, I know you talk about Enneagram sometimes, and I'm a 5 wing. So it's like I have big thoughts and feelings about lots of things, and I need them to be witnessed, and I need to talk about them and have them validated. And I've done like research on this topic, and it's a complicated one. There's like all this nuance to it. And I found myself in this interesting position of, you know, taking this medication that people have this kind of controversial, or seems controversial, take on it. Like, there's a lot of polarized stuff out there.
So I was exactly.
Like, I have a lot to say.
Well, I feel honored that you're willing to talk to me about it and share it with the listeners. And so we haven't like named the thing.
Yeah.
So should we name the thing?
Yeah. Ozempic.
Ozempic, GLP-1s in general, but even Ozempic, which I feel like it's the majority of the conversations swirling on social media. Bravo. I don't know, like any kind of TV show.
I don't know if it's like the OG GLP-1 drug, or if it's just like, this is the one we can all pronounce the easiest. So this is what we say.
Yeah. Well, and so what led you to want to decide to give it a try?
Yeah. So I have diabetes and a really, really strong family history. Like, if you look at my risk factors, like if you were a statistician, you'd be like, whoa, it is a matter of time. Like, you are almost guaranteed to have some kind of problem with this. So knowing that about myself, I've always been, you know, on top of that and like getting my A1C and like, you know, just kind of aware. And I was taking a different medication. My A1C crept up and it was like, okay, well, like this is the time to do something different. And there were a couple things about Ozempic in particular that I was like, oh, I think this would be helpful.
Do you remember what it was? It's okay. I'm not really putting you on the spot.
Yeah. I remember, like reading up about the beta cell neogenesis, like, oh, okay, this has like protective factors for, like those pancreatic cells, like some medicines don't, they just don't do that. So I thought that was impressive.
Yes. Yes.
And like some of the like specific biology of it, like I could kind of picture how it would be helpful for my body in particular. And I'll say that like I, that is like the five wing, whatever, investigative research.
I could totally see that.
Also like anxiety disorder. Like I can do a deep dive into some of that stuff. And I have a biology degree too. So like some of it is like, I just like to read like those articles and, see what's up. And surprisingly, I did not know that there was this whole big hubbub around this medicine when I started it. Because I guess I live under a rock or something. I didn't know.
Well, and it's been around for a long time.
Yeah.
You know, I don't see clients anymore, but I remember when I was seeing clients one-on-one, that was one that a number were using. And not everyone was able to tolerate it, but those who were, if they had insulin resistance as a part of their diabetes, it was working pretty well. They just had a hard time getting access to it. That was like the big, my big experience. And again, my experience is limited because I was already starting to not see as many people. Would you be willing to share like when you started it? Like, was it years ago?
No, it was not. It was, I want to say it's maybe been like a year, year and a half or something.
So what did you notice? Do you remember what it was like the first few days, weeks?
Yeah, I mean, I did have some side effects. Like, I feel like that's one of the things that you see a lot in the news. It's like, oh my gosh, these horrible side effects that kill people or whatever.
Right.
So like, I did have some of those like GI symptoms. I also expected them because like every diabetes medicine has some of that. Like, you're affecting your metabolism and your liver and digestive, like they all have some of those side effects.
Because the liver and the GI tract have a role in glucose numbers, so they often will target those. That metformin is one that I know a lot of people listening are like, oh yeah, like metformin.
Right. So, like, I think I kind of expected some of that. There was an adjustment period, right? Like, I felt different on it. I was like, oh, this is different. Like, this affects my appetite. I lost a lot of weight fairly quickly. And then it was kind of like this hump that, like, once I got over that, my body kind of like attenuated to it and it balanced out and my appetite changed. I had to kind of learn different hunger cues almost.
Okay.
And that was a really, you know, kind of cool process for someone who likes therapy and likes talking about all that kind of stuff, right?
Yes.
I'm
taking some notes here because I'm like, ooh, the different hunger cues. That's really interesting to me.
Yeah, like I noticed more like, whoa, I'm like really tired. Or, oh, like I have a headache. And then being like, oh, like that's actually a hunger cue that I wasn't. Good. It wasn't the top of the list for me before, like how my body is processing stuff is changing. And so how I relate to that is changing too.
So I don't know if it's because we're fellow fours, but like the intercept of awareness, I've often wondered if that's part of the four experience. I haven't talked to anybody yet who hasn't experienced high levels of intercept awareness and being a four, but I have a feeling I just haven't met anybody yet.
Yeah.
So that's really interesting. So like even having an awareness, like your ways, the ways your body's going to communicate hunger is going to change, which that makes me think about people in my family and clients I've had who use medication for ADHD.
This is one of the things that I can get. I can talk about, because I think one of the things we don't talk about with this medicine in particular is that like you have GLP-1 receptors in your brain.
Yeah.
Like this crosses the blood-brain barrier. And I don't think we talk about that. Like you see commercials or whatever the short spiel your doctor gives you is like, oh, this slows down your GI tract. It helps your pancreas. Right. It's like, it's changing the reward pathways in your brain too. Like there are research studies about that. Like it can make the like food feel less rewarding to people.
Yeah. So I can see how that would feel really, for some folks, like really exciting. And then for other folks, it can turn a page that could be really startling.
For me, it was kind of jarring to be like, I don't know what I want to eat. Like, I don't know what I'm interested in. Like, this is different. Like, having to kind of learn a different way of interacting with food almost.
Well, and especially with that awareness that you're describing of like, I can tell my body's giving me a cue to eat.
Yeah.
But I really don't want to eat anything. But what do I do about this? That sounds like a really hard place to be in.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially working in the way that you do, like, because the listeners already know what you do for a living. So like, this is not like you're just this random therapist who like doesn't talk about food and body stuff. So
And I'm having sessions and, you know, doing supervision and consultation with people who are navigating some of the same issues and you know, have big opinions and whatnot on these things.
So. So I'm laughing because I'm like, oh yeah, the big opinions. But like, so how did you navigate that? Like, how did you decide what to do next?
Therapy.
Great. Yes.
It was a process.
Yeah. Right?
And I think people need to be aware that this isn't like a cure-all easy medicine for people. Like it's been life-changing in terms of my blood sugar and how I feel and like my mood is pretty good. I sleep through the night better because my blood sugar is better. Like there's all these
cool,
positives where it makes it worth it for me. But the process was pretty wonky at times. And I actually felt a lot of like shame and difficulty talking about it because it seemed to be such a controversial thing.
Oh, that's such a big point. And I think before we push record, you know, you had mentioned the word nuance. I'm like, that just opens up all of that.
Yeah.
That's a good spot to explore the nuance. And so when you're hearing people talk, even colleagues or maybe fat activists talking about Ozempic or just similar medications, what's missing?
A lot. I mean, I think nuance, just like there's not room for it in some of those like scare tactic articles almost on either side, right? Like there's like kind of these like, what can you fit in a short amount of time? I think the like this can affect your brain and the reward pathway stuff isn't mm-hmm. talked about.
Yeah.
I think, you know, I've talked to so many people and I've also experienced the same where there's like a social cultural mm-hmm. aspect to it. Like, okay, people who are into, you know, body liberation and are saying, you know, this is horrible that people are using this medicine for, you know, just for weight loss. Like that can be hard to hear.
Tell me what comes up for you.
Yeah. I think it's like kind of handing someone a message that feels a little bit mixed in a way mm-hmm. of like, this is so horrible. This is really risky. People are using it and dying or whatever, you know, mm-hmm. scary articles. And then it's like, but if you're diabetic, it's fine. Right? So it's like, mm-hmm. well, how do you undo all of the like other mm-hmm. like anxious mm-hmm. you know, difficult, opinionated stuff around mm-hmm. it.
Can we go deeper in there?
Yeah.
Tell me what's the thing that like strikes the chord in that? Is it mm-hmm. As someone with diabetes? Is that something that like hits a certain like a spot mm-hmm. that hurts? Or
I mean, I think I am defensive and protective about it. Because mm-hmm. of family history and family mm-hmm. shame and trauma and whatever. Mm-hmm. And also there's so much misinformation about diabetes and what it actually is and how it works and how you treat it. The overlap is huge. Like I haven't heard anyone talk about like what 85 or 90% of people who have diabetes fall in like the overweight category. Mm-hmm. So it's not like you can say, okay, people who are using it for weight loss, that's bad. People who are using it for diabetes, good. It's like, okay. Those oftentimes are the same people. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that's a tough spot to be in.
Yeah. So is it because like sometimes people may be using it for both? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And I, you know, tell me what you think about this, but like something that I can look back on over the last 20 years is that there was a time where I was so against dieting that I was hating the dieter.
Yeah.
And I called myself an anti-diet zealot, for mm-hmm. fuck's sake.
A zealot. Yeah.
That was like on my Twitter description.
Yeah.
So, but then, you know, supervision and just mm-hmm. learning more. I'm like, oh, yes, it's the systems that are what's so harmful and mm-hmm. like how a person is surviving is how they're surviving. It's how,
right.
So is that what you're saying about
like
this
how
too?
How do we balance like ideals that I have anyway about people should be able to do whatever they want.
Yeah. Body autonomy. Their body, yes.
Right. Like,
yes.
Uh-huh. If this is what works for you, mm-hmm. great. I am not mm-hmm. you. I can't
right.
on that.
Right.
But,
right.
Like, holding that with also like how do we push against some of this diet culture stuff that is just really repetitive and mm-hmm. it's like, okay, yeah, like there's this medicine and then, oh, we notice people lose weight. So then like diet culture is like, oh, cool, weight loss drug.
Yes. Right?
There's this like opportunity that our culture has to seize to, mm-hmm. to make it about that.
I often fantasize about like, what if diet culture doesn't exist for many uh-huh. reasons, but like, In the nuance of GLP-1s, mm-hmm. what would it be like? What would our cultural experience with GLP-1s? How would they be different if there was no push for weight loss?
Yeah,
I don't know if you have a fantasy and how that would look.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's like not knowing about it. Mm-hmm. You know, like before
it would be
started
another medicine.
Yeah. Like. Mm-hmm. It shouldn't be anyone's concern what medicine I'm taking or not taking. Mm. And before weight loss was part of Ozempic, like people were taking it and
yeah.
That wasn't
for a long time.
A thing.
Yeah. I fear the connection with weight loss and like the capitalism within the weight loss industry, how they're encouraging to increase the dose without enough information yet.
Yeah.
And I wonder what will happen. I mean, this is like the the opposite of fantasy, paranoia. But maybe, I don't even know. It's like, is it really paranoia? But just like what will happen to the access of the medication at different doses if at super high doses ends up being harmful for some people, which, you know, I think that's like part of my concern with it and why I have that fantasy of like, what if the weight loss industry didn't exist? Would there be just less of a kind of a thrill and excitement within the industry about it? So then there would be more, I wish there was a better word, but controlled like dosing, you know?
Yeah.
Instead like of just playing around. Maybe that's it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, I think you can't talk about diety stuff without the idea of like, this is not sustainable. So it will probably have some sort of end. And so I get how you could be like, well, what is that going to look like? And what does that look like for people who have diabetes? And
That's that. Thank you for articulating that. Cause that's what I'm starting to fear is like for many people, this is something that has helped them to be able to sleep through the night, to have energy again, to help their A1C to be normalized and prevent the delay of some things they were hoping to delay. But yeah, what if it gets taken off the market? So I don't know what that kind of conversation is. Is it, how is that sitting with you? Like that kind of.
Right now, I feel neutral about it. I think when I was in the spot where I had been on it for a couple months, I was losing weight. You can't not have some kind of, you know, we're swimming in diet culture. So there's part of you that's like, oh, cool. People like that I'm losing weight. And then I started gaining weight because like my body's getting used to it and my appetite's coming back and I'm figuring stuff out and I have a set point for weight and I'm getting there. And like, that's all positive stuff. But the first time that happened, it was kind of terrifying. Right. And I was like, oh, like, you know, start thinking about like scarcity and like, what if I don't have this medicine? And then like, I can't maintain this and, you know, just being able to keep it up.
Would you be willing to go through what it was like on your brain? Because that's something that one of my friends, one of our colleagues, Laura Burns, she's a yoga teacher. And she is someone who explored her experience on, I don't know if she was on Ozempic, but some kind of GLP-1 a few years ago. And she was taking it for a similar reason, not that that matters, but like, you know, similar reason and experience some resurgence in her eating disorder. And it was just like really jarring, she said, like how it activated, partly probably because of the weight change that happened, but also just her brain seemed different and it was, it was scary. And so she recorded this, very like, qualitative kind of YouTube video where she describes what it was like. So people will know going into it. So I'll link it in the show notes in case anybody's interested. But yeah, like tell me what that was like if you're willing, you know, because I think it definitely is like a personal kind of experience. But
yeah,
whatever you're willing to share about that part.
Yeah, I think it, for me in particular, it was extra complicated because it was a new experience.
Okay.
You know, I haven't had an eating disorder, but like who hasn't, you know, been exposed to some kind of diet culture bullshit, disordered eating stuff. And that, you know, advocacy for, you know, body liberation is my work, right? So just the conflict of being like, I kind of like that this thing's happening, right? Or that people are noticing or rewarding me for it. Or, but then, you know, the opposite side of that is, what if people reject me because I lose weight and I'm some kind of like diet culture traitor? That people like I'm no longer gonna be part of this community. That was a big part of what was happening,
especially going through something that was stirring something in your brain to explore kind of eating disorder experiences and then not feel the support from the very community that's supposed to help with it.
And I felt so much shame around it, and I don't know if that's just diet culture stuff or family stuff or whatever, mm-hmm. where that mm-hmm. came from, but it prevented me from talking about it, and it made it more mm-hmm. insulated, like mm-hmm. to the point where, you know, I was meeting with my therapist who helped me work through so much of this, like shout out to my therapist.
High five.
Yeah, right. And at one point I was like, I'm going to tell her that I'm not taking it anymore because I don't want to talk about it. Like that's how
you were just done.
It was. Yeah. I was like, can this just not be a thing?
Yeah.
And I think if I had said that to her, she would have been like, fine, we can pause talking about it. But it was most accessible for me to be like, yeah, I'm not taking it anymore.
That sounds like, that's a similar conversation though, that people who are struggling with like how to recover will often bring to the table in therapy is like, mm-hmm. I'm just done fucking talking about this.
Right.
And oftentimes, people just need a break just to like, discuss it, not be aware of it for a little bit. Let me just have a little mini vacation. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I do think, you know, there were a couple of times where I came close to just being like, this maybe just isn't worth it. Maybe
the medicine or that's important, I think, for me as someone who does this work, and I hope anybody who's listening who does similar work, I don't know, or just a fellow human, mm-hmm. to think about that, mm-hmm. And how we can learn from past experiences within like body liberation spaces, like how to help people mm-hmm. navigate with whatever tools they're using. Mm-hmm. Let me think about this for a second. So, because I'm thinking about like, what do you wish people knew? So let's talk about like, since we're talking about body liberation spaces, like, mm-hmm. is there something, or are there things that you wish either therapists or dietitians or especially ones who are non-diet or mm-hmm. fat positive, is there something that you wish that they knew about these medications?
Yeah. I think it's just that nuance, right? Like that it mm-hmm. doesn't fall in either category of something that we should demonize or mm-hmm. something that's a cure-all. Mm-hmm. And it really kind of depends on the individual. And, you know, if someone was thinking about starting this medication, I would really encourage them to examine the whys, like the motivation for it, and to like really be sure that they're okay with that.
Mm-hmm. Is there something you wish you would have known before you started the medication?
I don't know. I think I was most caught off guard by some of the mental health related stuff.
Yeah.
And the shame stuff and the, kind of like the judgment of like, this is a huge part of my job. Why am I having a hard time with this?
Like you should be able to do this better.
Right.
Sort of. I hate that. Like,
yeah. Like, and it took a lot of, compassion and self-compassion mm-hmm. to be like, whatever. I'm just like, we're all fucking humans. It's fine. Yes. Right. Like it doesn't have to be a huge deal or a judgment either way.
Yeah. We're all just fucking coping.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Mm. Okay. Let's think about, I'm going to think about a couple more things, make sure I don't forget something. This is something I wanted to mention, and I'm curious if you experienced this. A number of people, like yourself, mm-hmm. who work in this space have told me that they use GLP-1s. Mm-hmm. I feel like super honorable position to be on to like mm-hmm. get this information. Mm-hmm. but people just wanting similar, what you said, just mm-hmm. feeling a lack of support. And many people who are either, colleagues or clients who have been in a space of advocating for themselves at the doctor or other providers mm-hmm. to not want to pursue weight loss or not want to see their weight or something like that. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. They mentioned these experiences of going to the doctor and the doctor seeing that medication. Mm-hmm. And it just basically opened up the weight conversation like they never had the boundary. Even after years and years having that boundary.
Yeah.
And so that, I've heard it so many times now that I've kind of just put on a list of like, just, before you go on it, just be aware that this may happen, mm-hmm. so it's not as jarring when it does.
Yeah.
Or if that's enough for someone to say, then I don't want to do it because that's just mm-hmm. too much for me to have to hold on to. So mm-hmm. I don't know if you experienced anything like that.
The idea that your interactions with your provider might be different.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did experience a little bit of that. you know, there was one point where I returned to my prescriber and said, like, you know, I've felt like I've attenuated to this. Like, it's normal. I don't feel as different in the beginning. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And my appetite's back and I want to mm-hmm. eat a lot of stuff. Right. And it feels mm-hmm. like maybe out of control. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. I would have loved in an ideal world for that person to talk about mental health and what supports you have and, mm-hmm. you know, normalizing some yeah. of that.
Because it seems really normal that that would happen.
Right. I haven't heard people talk about that part.
I mean, that seems like really like, yeah. I don't know enough about the physiology and yeah. we're going to have one of our local colleagues, Megan Hadley, is going to come mm-hmm. on to talk about like the ins and outs of like the mm-hmm. medication. She used to be a pharmaceutical rep and mm-hmm. that was one of her drugs. Yeah. But if a person's medication is making intake challenging and weight changes off of what the body likes to run at, it just mm-hmm. seems like pretty obvious. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Eating would be eventually trying to like, to fix it, you know?
Right. Yeah. Like yeah. there's this natural process happening. Yeah. Where, like, of course, my body's going to want to get back to that spot. And it's a positive thing. It's the thing that made this healing. Medicine sustainable for me. Like, otherwise, yes. it wouldn't have been a thing that would yeah. have been healthy for me. But mm-hmm. the response that I got was, okay, well, like, your blood sugar stuff looks great. But if you want a higher dose of Ozempic mm-hmm. to, you know, for weight loss, we can do that.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
So kind of like the opposite of what I felt like I needed was what was offered very yeah. easily. Mm-hmm. And I understand how a doctor would be yeah. in that spot.
Yeah. Ooh, that's such a nugget right there. That's like a fork in the road. Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. Like that can go so many different directions mm-hmm. because yeah, it promoted this euglycemia experience, mm-hmm. but then, instead of supporting and bringing up the mental health part, mm-hmm. it's like, well, I can help you turn it off again.
Right. Like there was a point where it was like, okay, the diabetes part is great. And like, mm-hmm. that's been life-changing. Like this medicine's mm-hmm. been really awesome for that. And when the doctor saw that and I was still fat, mm-hmm. there was like, oh, well, we can just increase this because you're still fat. Right. Mm-hmm. So there was a point where it was like, is it going to be about the diabetes or is it going to be about weight?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Ooh, that's such an important spot for someone to get support from a provider who can sit with all that nuance.
Yeah.
And not feel ashamed to bring it up mm-hmm. in like a fat positive space, mm-hmm. you know? Oh, that's where, yeah, the community can do a lot better to support you and anybody else who is exploring this.
Yeah. That's part of why I wanted to talk about it. Like I felt like mm-hmm. I had been on it long enough that I've figured out, kind of mm-hmm. been able to process some of my experience. And, you know, if no one talks about it, no one talks about it. And that's like, shame just loves that, right?
Shame loves that. Yeah. For sure. Yeah. And that's not going to help anything, right? Yeah. There's a way to talk about it. And I think it's important. Like this is definitely not a black and white experience. I'm also excited to talk to Donetta, also mm-hmm. Local friend, Donetta Floyd, who's going to talk about like diabetes and this medication. Like, mm-hmm. And yeah, just the more we can learn about all the different nuance with it, I hope mm-hmm. it helps people to feel less shame talking about it. And maybe it's going to be one-on-one and not on a podcast, but like, sure. but it's just you and me right now.
Mm-hmm. Not everyone does things as big as I do sometimes. You know, I don't know if it's the Enneagram 4 thing or what, but like I tend to have a lot of introspection and a lot of processing stuff. And then when I'm ready. And it's like, boom, mm-hmm. I can put it out there.
This could be an Enneagram podcast because now that I think about it, Laura Burns, the person I mentioned earlier, also a 4. Mm-hmm. But like the three of it's the rarest type. So, right. I mean, this is interesting that we've come together. Mm-hmm. But I think that's something that the three of us do share is like it takes time to process. And I don't want to name, you know, mm-hmm. how Laura's brain works. But like the fact that she did record that YouTube video mm-hmm. to share the experience, it sounds similar to what you're describing, too. Like mm-hmm. I've thought about it for the last, year and a half. Mm-hmm. I have some perspective and yeah, I want to get it out there to capture it.
Yeah.
So before we wrap up, is there anything we haven't captured yet that it needs to be said?
I mean, there's so much stuff.
Bring it.
I wish that there was some kind of official recommendation for providers who are prescribing this to be educated on certain things or to screen for certain things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I guess my fear is that there's so many people in larger bodies who have eating disorders or eating disorder history that are going to be prescribed something that is very likely to trigger some difficult stuff. And I would love for those people to have support or to make an informed choice about if they want to enter that territory or not.
Yeah. Yeah. Not just see the numbers on paper.
Uh-huh.
And just like, oh, well, you can lose more weight. So let's just keep upping it. But really, and I do think that's a big part of the weight loss industry is kind of just neglecting the importance of like how a person is living their life and the relationships they have and how food and their body is a part of that.
Uh-huh.
Just like not really weighing that as an important piece instead of like just focusing on, you know, the number or if they're tangling up weight and health and just seeing it together. So like, well, they could lose some more weight. So why not? Yeah, it's worth the risk.
Yeah. There was time where before I kind of figured things out, like food felt less joyful.
Oh, that's so hard.
Yeah. And I wish we could, you know, see that that is a component of well-being, like for food to be fun and enjoyable and celebratory or whatever.
Oh, that is a big one.
Yeah.
In a lot of the conversations I've had with clients over the years, when they have explored different ways to cope with emotions outside of food, and even just naming like, oh, I've been coping with food and I come from a place of like permission and like, hey, that's coping, you know. Yeah, exactly.
Like great insight.
Yeah, exactly. Like this is awesome. And sometimes when people start to name it, they notice it just isn't as much as of an oomph anymore.
Yeah.
And how much sadness people would bring into my office of like, I've lost this coping skill.
Right.
It doesn't have the same kind of oomph anymore. And so I would imagine a medication that does something with the GI tract and the and the brain, how that may even be more intense. And because the experiences I'm talking about with clients with emotional eating type stuff, it won't feel subtle at the, you know, in that moment, but it's a more subtle experience, you know, it's more of like realizing it after the fact, but I would imagine this was more jarring. So,
And
anyone listening, keep that in mind.
Right. To be like, oh, like, I know what my body wants and I know what foods would feel good and exciting and fun.
Well, and it sounds like it was like a double-edged sword. Like as it was starting to come back, it was like, oh, fuck.
Right.
It's starting to taste good again. This is does feel really – yes. How fucking complicated.
And I'm so lucky that I had literally probably like the best supports I could think of. Like I have access to good healthcare, great therapists, doctors who I like and trust and who I feel like I can talk to.
Friends who
are able to be neutral about it and talk to me.
So tell me if I'm wrong or like if I'm not seeing the whole picture. Like I'm imagining a listener who is either like thinking about going on the medication or maybe in that spot that you're talking about where like if they were starting it for a health reason, I mean, that's like we were talking about earlier, coping with diet culture is coping with diet culture. So, but if someone is at a dose where they're now tolerating it and the appetite's coming back, things are coming back online, the body is very predictably saying, I need to eat. And their doctor's saying, oh, you could just take more to shut it off again. What I'm imagining is like, it'd be really cool to have some kind of, I'm almost picturing like a algorithm. Like, okay, so let's turn the dial down or just pause for a second before we make any decision. Let's have you work with a therapist just to help you decide what your next best step is with a dietitian to just help you decide. Have some like family support, community support.
Yeah.
Is that something that like you see in an algorithm?
Just like imagine like the figurative muscle that it would take to be a patient in that situation and say, no, I'm going to reject the weight loss part and choose not to have a higher dose.
Yeah.
Like that is an uphill advocacy. Yes. Like that is like boss level difficult.
Yes. And
even if it's that's the right decision for you.
Right. Exactly. That takes like so much effort at that provider's office to be able to like, no. I'm like letting that sit. I think especially like for providers who have a similar experience as I do, like we need to listen to that.
Yeah.
You know, that's not an easy thing to do. And way more complicated. So oh my goodness.
Another thing you could do a whole episode on is access to this medicine, which I'll just like, point out there. But yeah, that's just just name that, that put that out there. Yeah. But that is a whole other topic. Yeah.
Well, and that's what I think needs to be explored. And body liberation spaces is a spot that could have that conversation. And do a lot of like in-depth kind of exploration in it if it was okay with the nuance of it.
Right.
So anyway, well, I appreciate you, first of all, reaching out. It's always great to chat with you, but then also willing to share your experience and anything else before we end?
I don't think so. This has been fun. I mean, I will talk to people about this topic. Now that I'm ready, I'm like, I have, like I said earlier, I have big thoughts and feels here.
And yeah.
So I'm glad that you were able to like hear those and validate those and hold them.
I think it's important. And yeah, thank you for trusting me with it. So I appreciate you. And thanks for coming on.
Yeah, of course.
So there you have it. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Jesse Spence. And thank you so much, Jesse, for being willing to be vulnerable and just help those of us who are talking about food, body size, and all that comes with healing one's complicated relationship with food. Just thank you for sharing your experience so we can like learn from that. This is something that I hope that you will handle, and by you, I mean, listener, I hope you'll handle this with care and compassion. Because that was a really important conversation for us to share and to explore. And I do hope it helps you just to have a better understanding for yourself and for others in your life. And just for everyone, like we're all coping, right? So anyway, that is all for me. And what you will hopefully find next, because as I'm recording this, I'm not sure if it's going to be happening in time, but it will be eventually, is I have two mini episodes coming up, like I mentioned in this episode, with two other local providers in my kick-ass town. And they're going to be exploring some of the technical sides to GLP-1s that I hope just helps you, again, to have some more information. So that may be coming up in the next few days or next week, but it'll be there. And with that being said, you will see an episode pop up in the next few days, whether it's that one or not. But until then, take care. Bye for now.